Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you. On my mind, Fox News in hot water again. The most watched cable channel is having its own bad news week. First came a report in The New Yorker outlining in new detail the cozy relationship between Fox and President Trump. Then two Fox hosts came under fire for anti-Muslim and misogynistic comments, putting the channel on the defensive and forcing advertisers to decide whether to pull out. Fox News is certainly no stranger to controversy, but is this time any different? I asked Paul Farhi, media reporter for The Washington Post. He came into the studio on Thursday morning. Paul Farhi, how great to see you.
Thank you.
2 years ago, you came on this podcast. We talked about Fox News' relationship with President Trump. Now, what do you see happening at Fox News?
Surprisingly enough, the relationship between Fox and President Trump has grown closer. We wouldn't have thought that it could have grown any closer than when Roger Ailes was running Fox. But Ailes, as it turns out, did have a sense of proportion and a sense of distance between the network and the politicians, some of whom it endorsed.
It didn't seem that way at the time.
It didn't seem quite the way. And now, since Ailes has been gone, they've gone all in. They went all in after the end of the primaries in 2016 when Trump was the nominee. And since then, you know, this notion that they are somehow state TV has arisen. And, of course, it's a little unfair to Fox, but it's not completely wrong. And there's a lot of interconnections that are unprecedented.
Tell me about those.
Well, for instance, the former president of Fox, a fellow named Bill Shine, went to the White House, was named the communications director. He just left. The Correspondents Network hosts have advised the president. They have been appointed by the president. The president watches Fox incessantly, tweets what he's heard and seen on Fox, and vice versa. And it's this kind of Mobius strip of broadcasting presidential policy, broadcasting again, and then more presidential policy. So it's very hard to know in some ways where Fox ends and Trump begins and vice versa.
So Jane Mayer had a piece in The New Yorker all about Fox's relationship with the president and with the White House in general. Were there any surprises there for
that,
you?
That to me was the surprise of this article, is that there really weren't a whole lot of surprises. In other words, these were threads that Jane Mayer very well pulled together into create this 11,000-word story. She really put it together very, very well. But again, many of the things had been reported over the past couple of years. The one thing that I found a little surprising or did not know really in reading this was the president's involvement in the Time Warner AT&T merger and his attempts, it appears from her reporting, to really interfere with that as a way to punish CNN, which is owned by Time Warner, now AT&T, and the extent to which he was trying to meddle in that merger and got the Justice Department, it appears, to take it on.
What about Fox killing the story on Stormy Daniels?
I'm still a little bit in the dark about that one. I reported a bit about that. And Fox News wasn't the only ones who were aware of Stormy Daniels at the time. There were at least three other news outlets that were aware of the Stormy Daniels accusation or allegations of a relationship with then-candidate Donald Trump. Slate, Daily Beast, and one other that I'm skipping my mind on, And none of them reported on this either. They all felt at the time that they did not have the story. So I'm a bit skeptical that Fox News had the story well enough reported and was able to kill this story based on some alleged plot to protect President Trump. There were others who were aware of it. Stormy Daniels was playing the media. It's pretty clear. She was attempting to get a payoff from Trump and his people, including Michael Cohen. At the same time, she was talking to the media saying, hey, I've got a great story here, but hold on. I've got some other business to take care of. And she did not come forward. She did not go on the record. And so I think in some ways it was a very difficult story to report as anything other than a rumor or, you know, an alleged kind of story, anonymous sources. It's really not the kind of story you want to rely on anonymous sources on.
And since that story came out, since the New Yorker piece came out, you've had an editor at Fox speak out about this.
That's right. And that's Ken LaCord. He was the editor of FoxNews.com, which is the website for Fox News. And he said there was no input from Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox or the chairman of Fox. It was his decision to kill that story because he felt that she had not adequately reported it and it had not been adequately vetted to a point where they felt comfortable with it. And I think that not knowing anything more, that is a legitimate way to go about it. You know, we need as journalists to feel comfortable that we can accurately report and rely on people who are telling us the straight deal. If there was a question about whether the story was solid, you don't go with it. And that seems to have been, at least according to Ken LaCord, the case in the Stormy Daniels story.
The old shine stepping down, it would seem President Trump doesn't really want, need a communications director.
Well, I counted this up when the news broke about Bill Shine, and he is either the sixth or the seventh, depending on how you want to count this, the sixth or the seventh communications director since the transition period in late 2016 that Donald Trump has gone through. And Sean Spicer did the job twice, once as an acting communications director. So clearly, it's not the kind of thing, not the kind of job that anyone holds for very long. Bill Shine had it for a whole 8 months. But I just think that says something about working for Donald Trump in terms of shaping his image. The guy who shapes Donald Trump's image is Donald Trump, and he does it every single day.
But Donald Trump thought that Bill Shine, coming from Fox News, could shape the image that he, Donald Trump, wanted.
That's right. And the reason for that is back in 2011, Donald Trump got a regular spot on Fox and Friends as a weekly commentator. The person who gave him that job was Bill Shine when he was, at that point, a senior vice president of Fox News, later to become president. So he trusted Bill Shine. He thought Bill Shine had his back, and he thought Bill Shine would be good for him. As it turns out, he didn't feel that Bill Shine actually had done the things that he wanted done, which I think naively was to get good press for President Trump. And that's not really how it works, and that's not really within the purview of the communications director. He can put the president in the best possible light, do the photo op, do the video of him. But, you know, the free press is, in fact, free and independent and is going to report the way it wants, not the way the White House is trying to orchestrate for us.
Now, what about the fact that the Democrats have decided that Fox will not carry their debates?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. This came a couple of days after the Jane Mayer New Yorker story came out, and that was kind of the pretext for the Democratic National Committee saying we won't deal with Fox with any of the debates. First of all, you got to understand the debates are a big deal for the TV networks. They draw very high ratings, relatively speaking. They're prestigious. They're a promotional vehicle for all the other shows that the networks put on. So they all want in. And Fox wanted in. The reality is that Fox had not had a Democratic National Committee debate since 2004. So it was probably unlikely, not impossible, but unlikely that they were going to be named it. Now, You can argue about the wisdom of cutting Fox out of the mix. It's a signal, first of all, for the DNC to say we're independent and we don't approve of Fox and we think Fox is state TV, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, you have to look at this and say, do we reach, in real politic terms, do we reach an audience through Fox that we might not reach through CNN, NBC, ABC, whomever else we're going to appoint? So maybe the DNC did itself a disfavor by excluding Fox from its debate roster.
Is that what you think?
Well, I think so. I think Jeff Greenfield, who used to be at CBS, a very smart commentator, put it. He said, you know, if Andrei Sakharov, the Russian Soviet dissident back in the 70s, was given a platform on state Russian, state Soviet TV, do you think Andrei Sakharov would have taken that opportunity? Wouldn't that not have been a great chance for a dissident to address the people of the Soviet Union about the issues that concerned him? And perhaps it's the same kind of thing, not quite parallel, obviously, but it's the same kind of thing. You know, you don't want to preach to the choir. You want to expand the congregation. And the DNC did have an opportunity to do so. They had other things they were dealing with, clearly, with Fox in terms of the PR and the image. But they could have reached an audience, a large audience at that, with their message. And that really is their obligation and their responsibility.
Now a quick break. When we come back, more from Paul Farhi.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Paul Farhi. He's media reporter for The Washington Post. So now, another story this week, Tucker Carlson. He's sort of been an ongoing story, but audio was released of him this week saying some pretty bad things.
Yes. This was audio of him appearing, I guess, several times a week or maybe weekly on a shock jock syndicated radio program out of Florida called Bubba the Love Sponge.
Facilitation of child rape.
Whatever the hell that means.
That means
he's
that
in prison. He's in prison because he's weird and unpopular, no, and he has a different lifestyle that other people find creepy. No,
and Tucker Carlson, this is when he worked at MSNBC now, would call into the show as a guest and they would have banter on.
Got some weird religious cult where he thinks it's okay to, you know, marry underage girls, but he didn't do it. Why
it's not entirely different than Trump's early appearances on the Howard Stern show, where they would do the classic locker room talk. And it's the same thing. But, you know, you got to be responsible for the things that come out of your mouth. And the things that came out of Tucker Carlson's mouth on this show are, frankly, pretty shocking.
A 16-year-old girl and a 27-year-old man. But that's the accusation. That's what they're calling felony rape.
I don't know what was in his mind. He said some of it was in jest. He hasn't said which of it was in jest. But it sure sounded like, you know, he was quite serious in talking the way he was talking. And Media Matters for America, which is a liberal watchdog group, dug these tapes up. And they've released them in two, you know, successive waves, frankly, in an effort to gin up advertiser boycott of Tucker Carlson's Fox show.
So Fox is hitting back at Media Matters.
That's right. And this is kind of standard playbook for Fox. And I don't know about Tucker, but for Fox, you know, Media Matters has been their nemesis for years. Ever since they were founded in 2004, they've always gone after Fox in particular. They've gone after Rush Limbaugh and other conservatives. But the standard response by Fox is to say Media Matters is a front group for the Democratic Party. It's funded by George Soros. it's violating its nonprofit status by campaigning and lobbying in behalf of Democrats, and we won't deal with their criticism of us. Media Matters' response is, we're not violating anything. This is our mission. We didn't make up these comments. Tucker Carlson said these things. They came out of his mouth. And we are in some ways just simply telling people what he has said.
And didn't George Soros stop funding Media Matters at least 5 years ago?
That's right. 2014 was the last time George Soros gave money. I believe in 2010 he also gave some money. I'm not sure of the amounts. George Soros has backed Media Matters. Media Matters was founded by David Brock, who is close to the Clintons, formerly a conservative writer. He helped break the Paula Jones story against President Clinton. He turned into a liberal. He renounced his background, started this group, got funding from various places, and frankly has elevated this group to a fair amount of prominence. A lot of it isn't by being unfair to people, and this is not an endorsement of Media Matters, but simply by finding things that people have said and promoting them to people and ginning up the outrage against these people and then turning that into a series of advertiser boycotts.
Now, has Tucker Carlson ever apologized for anything he said?
Decidedly no. And that seems to be, again, the strategy. We will certainly not apologize to the quote-unquote mob that's out to get us. He has not addressed on the air or off the air, for that matter, as far as I know, any of the specific things that he said. So it's more that he's going to turn the tables and say, this is the mob that's out to silence free speech, not just my own, but the free speech of anybody who believes in me. And furthermore, Fox is giving an alternative point of view, which certainly is true, giving an alternative point of view from all of the other networks, which is not really true. And this is intolerance, and this is thought control, and this is an assault on the free speech of others. Well, I would say it's not so much an assault on someone's free speech. It's someone else, in this case Media Matters, exercising their free speech.
What about Jeanine Pirro and the kind of trouble she's gotten into?
Yes. So last Saturday, Jeanine Pirro, the Judge Jeanine, as she's known on the air, went after Ilhan Omar, the Democratic congressman, a freshman congressman from Minnesota. She is a Muslim American, that is, Omar is. And Pirro said that she wears the hijab, which is the headscarf covering.
Omar wears a hijab, which according to the Quran 33.
This suggests, according to the Quran, that she is loyal to Sharia law.
Is her adherence to this Islamic doctrine indicative of her adherence to Sharia law, which in itself is antithetical to the United States Constitution?
And by inference, if she's loyal to Sharia law, she must be opposed to the Constitution of the United States, in effect calling her treasonous. And this predictably got an enormous reaction. Jeanine Pirro has not apologized also. Fox, interestingly, has said, we condemn what Jeanine Pirro said. Now, that's an interesting precedent, too. They don't usually call into question some of their own hosts. But they didn't apologize. They just said, we condemn this, and we've talked to her.
And it won't happen again.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a real question. You know, part of Fox, part of cable news these days is kind of like conservative talk radio, or maybe talk radio in general, not maybe public radio, but commercial talk radio. A lot of it's incitement. A lot of it is extreme commentary. A lot of it's provocation. And I'm not saying that is only from the right. There's some of it on the left as well. But the model of cable news, and at least the opinionated hosts on cable news, is to push the envelope, and they do. And that's what the audience likes. That's what the audience wants. You know, you don't go over the edge necessarily, but you're right at the edge. And you wouldn't be on cable news as a host unless you were making arguments that, you know, excited people, incited people maybe, but mostly excited your audience and gave, you know, gave hell to the other side.
Where are Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh at this point in this whole discussion of going too far or being right where they ought to be.
I don't see a whole lot of difference in Rush, the arc of Rush Limbaugh's career. He, you know, was kind of the original, not the originator necessarily, but the earliest, most successful conservative talk radio people. And he's still extremely successful, has a huge audience every week, every day. You know, he's a conservative. We know what he is, and he doesn't make any bones about it. There's no question about that. He hasn't been in deep trouble the way he was a few years ago when he went after Sandra Fluke, who was advocating for birth control. He's tamped that down, I guess. Sean Hannity is a slightly different animal, but comes out of the same tradition of talk radio, conservative talk radio. Is, I think, almost regularly the most popular host on not just on Fox, but on cable TV, cable news. Rachel Maddow challenges him in terms of the size of her audience, but nevertheless, very successful. And Sean Hannity, you know, has aligned himself very, very closely with President Trump, has shown up at his rallies, has endorsed him, has interviewed him multiple times. I mean, this goes back to the state TV theory that Sean Hannity and President Trump are hand in glove.
So what about advertisers? How are they responding?
Well, that's where Media Matters has been somewhat successful. I don't want to over-exaggerate any of these boycotts. Media Matters has ginned up any number of boycotts over the years against Fox. Fox rolls along. The projections for their revenue, the projections for their profits are enormous. Rupert Murdoch sold off a fair part of his empire to Disney, and that deal is just about to go through, and Disney is about to take over 20th Century Fox Film Studio and a whole lot of other assets. One of the things that Rupert Murdoch kept in his empire is Fox News. And the reason for that is it's enormously profitable. So is CNN. So is MSNBC. Not as profitable as Fox News, though. So to say that Media Matters is successful, you know, compared to what is the question? One of the things about boycotting a Tucker Carlson or trying to get advertisers to boycott a Tucker Carlson is advertisers want to be on Fox. And if they're not on Tucker Carlson's show, there are 23 hours of the day where they can go elsewhere. And that's exactly what happens. So don't put my ad on Tucker Carlson's show. Stick it someplace else. In the meantime, the money keeps rolling in because you're still going to pay for the time slot and the airtime. And so I can't really see how Media Matters has made a true dent in Fox News', you know, economic success. Maybe they've limited the upside, but there's a lot of upside there.
And Jane Mayer, do you think her piece is going to make a dent anywhere?
Well, it already has. I mean, in the sense that the Democratic National Committee said we're not going to deal with Fox. I mean, whether they were ever going to in the first place, Jane Mayer gave them a very good reason not to. You know, the Democrats are holding hearings about this Time Warner interference, alleged interference by President Trump. I think it was a very important article. And again, pulling together a lot of strands to create a particular picture.
You know, 2 years ago, we were talking about Bill O'Reilly. And what happened there is he lost his slot.
Yes.
Do you see any of these folks being anywhere near to being pushed out?
That's a great question. And the parallels of Bill O'Reilly and Tucker Carlson are interesting. The parallels of Glenn Beck and Tucker Carlson are interesting. And here's why. Bill O'Reilly was the biggest attraction for Fox and cable TV, bar none. What brought him down, not only these series of sexual harassment payoffs that he made, was the abandonment of his advertisers. So he lost economic value. In other words, his ratings still stayed very strong. Same with Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, when he left the Fox News in, I believe it was 2010, 2009 time period, his ratings were very, very strong. He was on at 5 p.m., a time when most people don't watch cable news. Yet he had the same problem Bill O'Reilly had and the same problem that Fox recognized, which is that his advertisers had abandoned him. Fox couldn't sell that hour very well. So that's the risk, perhaps, that Tucker Carlson faces. Fox has come out very, very strongly in favor of Tucker Carlson. Now, Time is a great support for a network under these circumstances. Boycotts are very hard to sustain. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of publicity, and, you know, people move on. So I think Fox has calculated that, one, on principle, we're not going to give in, but two, we can beat it if we wait long enough. The advertisers will come back. His ratings are still strong, particularly now that he's in the news so much. People tune in to see what's going on there. He may beat the rap.
Have you talked with any of those advertisers?
Yeah, I talked with a few of them, particularly in the last go-round with Laura Ingraham. She had a boycott going back last year. They all issue variations of the same statement, which is, we have instructed our advertising buyers to place our ads elsewhere on Fox News. We don't want to be associated with this particular program at this time. And that's the end of that. You know, the advertisers are in the business of making friends. They are not in the business of having people on social media say, company XYZ, why are you still advertising on this hateful, racist program? And, you know, they're controversy averse. They don't want to be associated with controversy. It's not a statement about how they feel about Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson or Bill O'Reilly. It's how they feel about selling their products and services.
So have any of those advertisers drifted back to Laura Ingraham?
Yes, I think some of them have. I couldn't document it. I couldn't tell you which ones specifically. But, you know, after Time, when the coast is clear, they do start to come back in. Now, Laura Ingraham is down in terms of her advertising. If you look at the actual minutes devoted to ads on her show, and the nature of the advertisers has changed, too. This is not a good sign when you have these direct response kind of advertisers, not the big brand, fancy, prestigious brand names advertising on your show. In talking with the head of sales at Fox, she says, you know, there is a seasonal up and down to these things. We're in a slow season, you know, post-Christmas, first quarter. These things tend to come back. But I think there's some acknowledgement that that last boycott has had some effect on her advertising, and people are lying low. It's possible they'll come back as well.
Interesting to see how long Fox will wait that out.
Well, Fox has nothing but time, and meanwhile, the money's rolling in. The projections on Fox is that they will make something like $1.7 billion this year. Now, understand that this is not an election year. When you go to the next year, 2020, that's boom times because, you know, you get political ads, that you get heightened viewership as a result of coverage of the political campaigns. Television does gangbusters during election years, particularly presidential election years. And next year will be spectacular, not just for Fox, but for everybody in the television business, you know, selling ads.
Anything else I should have asked you about Fox?
Well, we didn't really talk about CNN and what has happened as a result of Fox's problems has become a kind of rebound shot on CNN. If you watch CNN, their coverage, some portion of their coverage, a lot of their coverage, in fact, is devoted to talking about what's happening over at Fox. And vice versa, too, I might add. You know, Tucker Carlson goes after CNN quite a bit on his program. And if you watch these two, they're kind of bookends of each other, that any reference to the other's problem gets a fair amount of attention on the air. And to my mind, this is unprecedented. NBC didn't even mention ABC or CBS back when, and vice versa. None of those networks would refer to some issue going on at the other network. But CNN and Fox have this great love-hate relationship with them. They just can't quit each other.
Paul Farhi, thank you as always.
Thank you for having me.
And that's all for today. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianereem.org. Our theme music is by Jim Bruntberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Douglas Bell and Natalie Urev-Lipker. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with you Tuesday. I'm Diane Rehm.